Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, good morning. I'll try that again. Good morning. I'm not who you expected up here, so I'm your substitute, Jude Salmon's done, and no, I have no conflict of interest. Welcome to session 4119, Educational Tools for Teaching Community Environmental Health. The order in your book is being rearranged a little bit by our presenters, and our first presenter this morning is going to be Katie Huffling, and she is Assistant Director of Midwifery at Dimensions OB-GYN Association in Maryland, and she's going to speak on prenatal environmental health assessment tool.
Hi, my name is Barb Sattler. I'm not Katie, but I really like Katie a lot. I just wanted to introduce this session and tell you why we kind of changed up the order a little bit. Two of our speakers couldn't be here, one for a health reason, and I'm doing my presentation and their two presentations. And what we're going to be talking about are assessment tools. And Katie has developed an assessment tool, and she was going to go last, but I was afraid that after I did three presentations, I would have covered everything that Katie was covering, which I've done in the past to her. So wanted to let her go first so I could say, as Katie has said. And I also wanted to just let you know that over the, and I'm going to close that door. That over the years, we've been doing lots of sessions at APHA, sort of raising consciousness around environmental health. And I think we've done a very good job, just not just with APHA members, but with other nurses around the country at sort of raising consciousness around environment and health. But what nurses want to know almost immediately after they're outraged by some of the realities is, so what do I do differently? And so what we have been doing over the last couple of years is developing the practical tools. And so the tools that we're going to be presenting today are in many ways works in progress because we're presenting them from our perspective. You may be in a different region of the country. You may work in an organization that is slightly different and has additional issues and or problems. And we'd love to hear how you would use this tool, but also how you would adapt it because you've got different circumstances because we're in a place of collective learning. So there'll be four presentations on assessment tools, and then Marjorie Buchanan has put together, expressly for public health consumption, a set of resources, web resources, that she thought might be helpful for you. And then after she's done, I'm going to come up for just a minute to talk about some of the web resources, a new web resources that we're going to be developing also expressly for you. So with that, Katie Huffling's going to start.
Hi, good morning. And I have no relationships to disclose. So basically what I'm going to do is I've broken down the assessment tool into little sections. My prenatal environmental health assessment tool is comprised of 10 sections and is based on the home assessment tool developed by Allison Davis that Barbara's going to be talking about. I tried to focus on exposures that my patients would be able to reduce themselves, not exposures that they may not have any control over or that they couldn't change. I wanted it to be something where they could see the positive impacts that they were able to do themselves. So I created this tool so that it could be used by clinicians in a variety of settings, from nurse midwives and nurses in offices to home health nurses. When I use it, particularly in my practice, I generally have the women take the assessment home, answer all the questions at home, and then we go over it at their next office visit if they have any questions about it. The first section of the tool assesses risks from lead, radon, and carbon monoxide and fire safety. But I'm going to specifically focus on carbon monoxide. For each section, I'll just focus on one little areas. So, and then Barb will be covering some of the other areas. Carbon monoxide is created by the incomplete combustion of fuel. It's referred to as a silent killer. It's odorless, colorless, tasteless. Carbon monoxide poisoning can be difficult to detect during pregnancy because the symptoms are similar to what a lot of women already feel during pregnancy, such as fatigue, nausea, vomiting. As with many other chemical exposures, the fetus appears to be particularly sensitive to the negative effects of this carbon monoxide during the first trimester. Fetal exposures during the first trimester have been associated with slower growth, lower birth weight, and preterm delivery. Carbon monoxide exposures can come from a variety of sources in the home. It can come from an attached garage where you have an idling automobile. It can come from combustion heating sources such as a furnace, kerosene, gas or space heaters, and wood-burning stoves or fireplaces. So how can they prevent exposure? They can try not idling in the garage or using things like lawnmowers and letting those idle in garages as well. Maintaining their combustion heating sources and making sure they're properly vented, and having carbon monoxide detectors on every level of their home if they use a combustion heating source. I really like the EPA website. It's very informative and easy to use. It's got quick facts on both health effects and on ways to decrease exposure. So if you have questions, it's easy for you to go to or send your clients to. I'm not going to go into great detail on these sections. However, I wanted to highlight one area, which is that many people don't realize that the flea and tick products that are applied to pets are really potent pesticides, and they can be harmful both to pets and to people. And so these may be especially toxic to young children who, with their hand-to-mouth tendencies, are touching the pets, they're down on the floor, playing with the pet's toys. All of these things can have high levels of these pesticides. This section focuses on smoking, drinking, drugs, and medications, as well as exposures from cleaning products, air fresheners, and personal care products. From this section, I'd like to focus on personal care products. I find that, especially with some of my younger clients, that discussing possible exposures from this source can be a really effective catalyst in making them think about other sources of exposures and possible effects on their health. So there's over 10,000 different chemicals used in personal care products in the U.S., and only 11% have been tested for safety, which I find extremely shocking. When I first was learning about environmental exposures, I was astounded to hear about the majority of chemicals found in personal care products. We don't even know if there's any effects to them. There's just been no testing done on them. And if you look at how these products are used by the average adult in the U.S. daily, you're being exposed to over 100 different chemicals, which we have no idea if they're safe or not, and that's every day. As an example of a chemical found in personal care products, I'd like to focus on one family of chemicals called phthalates. These are a family of chemicals that are used as a plasticizer in PVC products, including many plastic children's toys. They're also used as a fragrance enhancer in personal care products, as they make the scent last longer. An evaluation of urine samples from the National Health Nutritional Examination Survey, or NHANES, over 75% of the samples for the five most commonly used phthalates 75% of the samples were positive for five of the most commonly used phthalates, which indicate a widespread exposure in the U.S. Boy fetuses appear to be especially susceptible to the effects of phthalates in both animal models and with an increasing body of human evidence. Boys exposed to phthalates in utero have smaller penises, a shorter distance between the anus and the base of the penis, and undescended or incompletely descended testicles. these changes could have negative effects on sperm production and fertility. One of the easiest ways to reduce phthalate exposure from personal care products is to read labels. You don't want to buy any products that have fragrance or phthalate as an ingredient. This is a really great resource if you want to learn more about what's in your personal care products. It's at cosmeticsdatabase.com. They've evaluated over 25,000 products, and you can search for products used under both product, ingredient, and by the company name. This final section of the tool looks at mercury exposures in the home and foods, other food exposures, and exposures in home renovations and furniture. Mercury exposure is of concern both for its neurotoxic effects from acute exposures, but also from the effects that may be seen from fetal exposures and exposures of young children. These effects include delayed learning, shortened attention span, memory deficits, delayed language acquisition, poor motor control, or coordination. A source of mercury that many people do not know about is compact fluorescent light bulbs. These light bulbs significantly reduce the amount of electricity used, but need to be disposed of properly. If you're unsure of where to dispose of mercury-containing products, you can always contact your local waste collection services, and they can tell you how to dispose of them in your area. Also, I've found that many stores that sell the compact fluorescent light bulbs, such as Home Depot, have drop-off boxes where you can dispose of them properly if you don't have a place in your area. Mercury is of concern in fish because it's a metal that bioaccumulates as it moves up the food chain. One of the main contributors to mercury in our waters is through human activity, such as coal-burning power plants. After the mercury is deposited in the body of water, bacteria transform it into methylmercury. Methylmercury accumulates in aquatic animals, and the concentrations can increase by up to a millionfold in fish at the top of the food chain. This is the FDA and EPA fish advisory. What can be difficult when counseling about women about fish consumption is that if the woman follows the guidelines, these FDA, EPA guidelines, and eats the amount of canned tuna that the guidelines state is safe, she can easily go over the EPA's level of concern for mercury. In general, a woman who's pregnant or is likely to get pregnant should eat no more than 2 cans of light tuna per week, or 2/3 of a can of white albacore tuna if she wants to stay below the EPA's level of concern. But you have to keep in mind that the amount of mercury in a single can can vary considerably, based on the type of tuna and where it's caught. So albacore and solid white tuna is the most likely to have higher concentrations, so I counsel my patients just to stay clear of albacore tuna. It's just too difficult for them to try to figure out which is safe and which is not. This is an example of a wallet card that you can print out offline, and so that they can have a resource when your clients can have a resource when they're purchasing fish. What I really like about this particular card is that it doesn't just evaluate mercury levels, but also looks at other chemicals and also overfishing. This is a nice online calculator where you can calculate the amount of mercury based on the type of fish, the amount consumed, and also your weight. A great feature for this calculator is that if you eat multiple types of fish every week, then it's easy to put in all those types of fish and you can figure out your weekly fish consumption. And it's available in Spanish for your Spanish-speaking clients. So I'll just quickly run through my home renovations part here. The couple things that I wanted to talk about were volatile organic compounds. These have been linked to asthma, earaches in newborns, developmental delays, and cancer. And the VOCs are these odors that you smell, like if you're painting with latex paints, that's the VOCs that you're smelling. Luckily, there are alternatives. You can use low or no VOC paint, and I've actually used the low VOC paint, and it, you don't even smell it when you're painting. It's pretty amazing. I recommend pregnant women not even do renovations. Just stay away from all of that completely. Also, buying new furniture for the nursery, there's VOCs in a lot of the glues, these adhesives that are used like in pressed wood products. And so try not to use those products, or if you do, to make sure that it's totally covered with some type of outer protective coating or layer. Another chemical of concern is polybrominated diphenyl ethers. These chemicals are used as flame retardants and are very persistent in the environment. The types of PBDEs found in furniture were phased out in the U.S. beginning in 2004, but they're still found in furniture and foam items made before that phase out was complete. And these chemicals have also been banned in Europe beginning in the 1990s. Unfortunately, they're concerned because they're found in really high levels in breast milk. I'm almost done. Two slides. They're structurally similar to thyroid hormones and may block the transport of thyroid hormones throughout the body. In animal studies, PBDEs decrease thyroid hormone levels in both mothers, developing fetuses, and babies, alter thyroid hormone regulation, and reduce birth weight of offspring. This disruption of thyroid hormone regulation has frequently been associated with permanent behavior problems and brain damage. As you can see, the levels of PBDEs are much higher in the breast milk of mothers in the U.S. As opposed to other countries where these chemicals have been banned. But there is hope. The reason I put this in here is because there is a positive message out of this. As you can see, there were rapidly increasing levels of PBDE in breast milk, and these were first identified in Sweden, where they have a very nice breast milk biomonitoring program. The Swedish government took a look at this and started banning PBDEs beginning in the early 1990s. And as you can see, as it starts to go up, but then they're starting to come down. So we know that banning them and stopping their use really does get them out of breast milk. So if we can make a change here in the U.S., we can make a change in the mother's breast milk. These are some of the things that you can do to reduce exposure, to making sure you vacuum and dust at least once a week, which doesn't happen in my household, but trying to replace furniture with crumbling cushions or cover it with fabric, or the best possible thing would be just to totally replace those older cushions if possible. And I hope this attachment tool will help assist you in your efforts to have healthy, beautiful babies. Thank you.